The flood in Carroll County, Texas, which took over 100 lives, took place just as discussions and debates were happening regarding recent staffing cuts at the National Weather Service. The belief quickly became that those cuts led to the deaths from the flood. So is that an accurate observation? Even if it isn't, should there be concerns about those job cuts at the National Weather Service? Joining us to examine all this is a man with 20-plus years in leadership positions with NOAA. He's a former president of the National Weather Association and National Weather Association Foundation. He's now the CEO of Balanced Weather. Alan Girard, thanks for being here today, Alan.
Thanks for having me.
BalancedWeather.com, and Alan's also at Substack, balancedweather.substack.com. And yes, we do have those links at our homepage. Let's start with the basics. We'll get into the specifics as we go along here. As you look at the overall situation, because I've heard that the local National Weather Service stations around the area of the flooding in Kerr County, the term I've heard was they were adequately staffed. To me, that sounds like a great difference from fully staffed. Should we be troubled by that choice of word?
I don't know if troubled so much as, you know, I think the way you framed it there at the beginning is, you know, is pretty insightful from the perspective that it does appear like the office had enough, you know, had what we would hope an office would have as far as people on duty during the actual flood event. And so from that perspective, the warnings and the forecasts seemed, pretty well on target. But the issue that we're talking about here is that the office is definitely not fully staffed. In other words, they had to, bring in people on overtime and, kind of have an all-hands-on-deck mentality to get through that event. And what we're concerned about here is that if you continue to do that over a prolonged period of time, and there are many Weather Service offices facing these kind of shortages, that we're increasing the risk that there will be impacts.
Well, the question becomes, I'll make a radio analogy out of this. You could take a disc jockey from a country station, put him in because someone at the rock station called out sick, put him in the rock station. Yeah, he could operate the board and they could work the computer, but will they know the music?
Yeah, that's a good analogy. And you know, the Weather Service is doing a lot of that kind of thing to fill holes right now. And, you know, one of the things that has been, in the media as a concern about this particular event was that the warning coordination meteorologist, who is the management official that oversees for each Weather Service office their interactions with the emergency management and local officials, that position has been vacant for the last few months. The person took early retirement during the Doge buyouts a few months ago. And so from that perspective, even though that person doesn't personally, make all the phone calls to emergency managers and counties during an event, the fact that that position is vacant is certainly, cause for at least some concern about how effective the warning outreach was during the event.
Because there were numerous electronic alerts made, but unless you have your phone on full volume and even on instead of sleep mode, you're not going to hear them at 1:15 in the morning.
Yeah, and that's obviously, an overarching issue here is that, this event really occurred, this heavy rainfall really occurred at the absolute worst possible time, the middle of the night on the morning of the 4th of July, when most of these campgrounds were full and there were apparently a lot of people just camping on public land near the river. It obviously was a worst case scenario.
From what I was able to backtrack and look for, this was from NPR. On July 3rd, 1:18 p.m. Texas time, the Austin San Antonio office issued a flood watch. 6:10 p.m., the posted a report saying flash flooding likely at 11:41 p.m. The Austin San Antonio office posted another flash flood warning. So again, the electronic warnings were there, but is that the missing piece where there's human communication and connection between those in the distance who can only communicate electronically to the masses versus those in the distance who can talk directly to local people who can get out to the remote areas and say, move it, guys?
Yeah, you know, in the weather community, we call that, you know, the last mile. You know, we can put out all sorts of warnings and alerts, but if they don't end up getting to the people that need it and those people don't act on it, then it really doesn't do a whole lot of good. And there's been a lot of work in the last number of years by NOAA to do more research and, you know, actual work to try to bridge that last mile, you know, in partnership with entities like FEMA. And, you know, the wireless emergency alerts system is one of the ways in which that we're trying to fill that gap. But obviously in a remote area like this, not everybody is going to get a warning on a cell phone because the cell coverage is spotty.
For an office that SI San Antonio, the Austin San Antonio offices, the reports are saying each had five meteorologists on duty when the flooding occurred. We've been hearing with air traffic controlling, for example, there have been as few as two, even one air traffic controllers sitting in a tower at any given point. Are five meteorologists on duty in a flood season period of time, for example, let's go back to those two words. Is that full staffing or adequate staffing?
On just a routine shift, you know, on an overnight shift at a weather forecast office, there would usually only be two people on duty. And for the duties on just a regular night, where, you know, you're just issuing routine forecasts, that's pretty sufficient and standard. Having five on staff for a weather event like this, I would say, is pretty normal. I mean, you could look back in hindsight and say, you know, well, this ended up being a huge catastrophe. They, you know, maybe should have had more people there. But the reality is there was no way to anticipate upfront that this was going to be the level of event. You know, the rain fell in the absolute worst spot that it probably could have fallen in the area where it did. And so, I mean, I would say, you know, for the level of flood event that they were anticipating, five meteorologists is a pretty, you know, would be what you would expect an office to have for that type of an event.
Over to Alan Gerard, who is the CEO of Balanced Weather, former leadership of NOAA for over 20 years, balancedweather.com. And Alan's on Substack, where he writes about the obvious topic, balancedweather.substack.com. And you are listening to Issues and Ideas. AP had a report a few days ago. They were connecting members of the Trump administration to private companies who would benefit from the privatization of what NOAA and the National Weather Service does. They range from Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick to the current nominee to head NOAA. Should people be concerned about these connections? Neil Jacobs is the nominee for leading NOAA, and he just the other day promised to put jobs back into NOAA and the National Weather Service. So that seems to be a little conflicting seat that he's sitting in right now, too.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it's something to be concerned about. I mean, not to get too heavily into politics, obviously, there's a lot of concerns, you know, just in general with the current administration and, you know, potential conflicts of interest. From my perspective, one of the big reasons that I'm concerned about the increasing trend of privatization really has a lot to do with events like this one we had in Texas, where, you know, right now the Weather Service provides services and forecasts to, you know, whoever needs them, you know, regardless of their, their level of ability to pay. I mean, they're providing them for free. So, I was a meteorologist in charge of a Weather Service office in Mississippi for a number of years. And I'm very familiar with these rural counties that have very small resources. And if they become expected to pay for, specialized warning and forecast services to help them meet their public safety mission, that's going to become a serious problem. So I think it's really important that we protect the ability of the Weather Service to be able to meet all of those needs. Now, that doesn't mean there isn't a role for private sector. There is, but I think we need to be protective of the core mission for the Weather Service of providing public safety information.
Well, with any platform of information, you need a foundation, and that certainly is what the National Weather Service provides for the weather stations as well as the local weather forecasters. I mean, if you took the National Weather Service away from a small or medium market TV station somewhere in Florida or Texas, what would their capabilities be reduced to?
Their capabilities would be pretty much non-existent, to be honest. And I think that's one of the reasons why you see a lot of broadcast meteorologists being quite vocal about these potential cuts to the Weather Service. They recognize that they can't realistically do their job without the Weather Service. And even you're seeing a lot of private weather companies talk about this. The reality is that the entire weather community in this country is based upon the data and forecast information that comes from the National Weather Service. And there is a role for the private sector. There's an increasing role for the private sector in helping with things like observations. There's more and more companies that are doing things like installing radars and things like that. And that's great, but it should all be thought of as ways to just make things better. The core functions of the National Weather Service to gather data and put together forecasts, as you said, it's foundational, and we need to protect that.
And just to wrap up here, as far as looking ahead with the National Weather Service, it seems like they're on a path to make product a priority versus the science a priority. Do you see it as that flow going that way? And what should the balance be? Should they be both equal, or without the science, do you have no product?
Well, yeah. I mean, the reality of it is, right now the president's proposed budget for 2026 would eliminate NOAA's research line office, the Office of Oceanic and Atmospheric Research. And if that happens, at that point, you're eliminating the injection of any new science into the Weather Service. So you're really getting to a point where you're stagnant, and you're basically just continuing to issue forecasts and warnings based on, the technology of today. And obviously we know how much technology advances every year, and weather is so important to public safety. We don't want to lose the gains that we're gaining from better technology and better science in our public safety forecasts and warnings.
And just to wrap up, I mentioned the CEO of Balanced Weather. What are the services that you provide? I mean, you're on Substack, obviously, so you're an educator about weather through your writings. But as far as Balanced Weather, what are the services that you provide?
Well, one of the things that I do is try to be able to provide, as we talk about specialized services, a lot of people in the private sector, have needs for weather information that go beyond what the Weather Service can just provide. And I can provide that kind of information, plus, kind of serve as a interpreter, for lack of a better phrase. A lot of private companies and individuals get into situations where they need to understand more of like what we're talking about here, about what happens behind the scenes in the Weather Service, and that's insight I can provide.
Find out more at balancedweather.com, and you can follow Alan's writings and insight on Substack at balancedweather.substack.com. Alan Gerard, thank you so much for the education today. Much appreciated, and have a great weekend.
Thanks.